Welcome, everybody. For those of you who are over here, you're kind of behind my screen. I'll try to walk around over here. It's kind of an odd setup. My name is Stephen Borg. I'm from a company called Northwest Cadence, and I'm a co-founder and strategist there. And what I love about this talk is I get to talk about business value. I get to talk about reporting. And there's some really powerful things about reporting that can impact your business. So how many of you are using TFS today? How many of you are using reporting? TFS report? A good chunk. So it's about 70% of the folks who are using TFS are using reporting. It's a good mix. It's better than it has been in years past. So why do you care about reporting? We'll take something for the audience. Why do you care about reporting? You're taking an hour out of your day. Why do you care? Business metrics. And what do you need business metrics for? Yeah, so you need to validate what's happening right now. You can also use it to look forward. What kind of changes can we make to improve our process in the future? Excellent. Other reasons for reporting. It's an insight into what your company is doing. And TFS has a massive amount of data. I don't know who saw Jeff Levinson's talk this morning about the massive TFS implementation at Boeing, but Boeing has taken reporting to an art form and has, 40,000 people using TFS for the reporting capabilities and currently 800 people entering data into TFS in work items. So they've really spread out to use it widely and effectively. My style of presentations is for you to interrupt me during the presentation. These are the demos we have today. We're going to walk right through the demos. There's one I trimmed out, modifying the built-in SSRS reports. It's because I don't quite have enough time, and it's nearly identical to part of the presentation I gave last year, which is still online. So if you're here only for SSRS reports, I won't be covering that unless we have plenty of time, but I think we'll run out of that. Any concerns that people have about that? Okay, just wanted to get that expectation out. The other thing is it is a 400-level course or talk, but not because of the depth in any one topic, but because of the breadth. We're looking at things from tabular data to cubes to web technologies, et cetera. So we're broadening a lot of things. So that's why it's a 400 level. All right, let's get started. By the way, that was close to my last slide. So let's go over and start a little bit on the demonstration. And the first thing I'm going to want to pull up is simply the website. And I'm going to pull up Fabricam Fiber so we can take a look at this, because reporting comes in all sorts of different flavors. A lot of the times we think about reporting, we think about, I need to build some report that sits on a website somewhere that someone will pull up and look at, or that I'll print and hand to somebody. But in reality, reporting is meant to provide information at all sorts of levels. So there's lots of different levels. This is reporting, because it gives you a visualization of what's happening on the team. So I've got, for instance, my burn down, those sorts of things. I can pop over here and look at my board. This is itself a type of report. As I drag things around, I can see what's happening. I get that visualization of what's going on in my development team. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time here, because that's definitely something you've seen before and seen a lot of. So let's step out now and jump into the other reports that are just out of the box. And here are some of the reports for Fabricam Fiber. Now, every team project type comes with a different set of reports. This is Scrum, so I've got a very limited number of reports in the Scrum 2.0 template. But you can see here I've got things like the sprint burn down, release burn down, velocity, and I can take a look at some of these and understand what's happening in my development team over time. So here's my velocity. These are in story points, and I'm measuring where I am and how much I've done in the past. We can pop back and we can look at things like sprint burn down. And we can see what's happening during this our sprint burn down. We can go back. That one doesn't match the other one, by the way. It's a little bit more difficult to get it to. Builds. We can pop into builds and look at something like the build summary report to give us an understanding of the automated builds we've done. So the idea behind these built-in reports are provide you with the data you need on a day-to-day basis to meet that kind of first level of need. This comes in every version of Team Foundation Server. There's another set of reports, and those are the reports that run on SharePoint. And those SharePoint are also out-of-the-box reports. And let me pop over to the Fabricam Fiber portal. And we can see this report, if you would. This is the release burndown. Now, it doesn't have a lot of data in it, so the release burndown looks awful. But what's interesting about this release burndown is it points against one of those other reports, those SSRS reports that I just showed you from the reporting server. It points to those reports. Alternatively, once we're at SharePoint, we can pop over and we can get these reports. This is an Agile template, so if you're using Microsoft Agile, you get these types of reports. These don't come from SSRS. These come from Excel. So these are hosted in Excel, and I'll be showing you how we build your own in a moment. Has anyone used that? Few folks. It's a powerful way to make those changes, to see what's there. And that's our quick overview of the built-in reports. Am I missing anything that you really want to see? Just very fast over that. Yes? Can I point out some differences between 2010 and 2012 reports? No. They are very, 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 very similar between the two. A lot of changes went. There were some that were added to Scrum 2.0. I don't know which particular are deltaed between 1.0 and 2.0. But the rest, it's very, very similar. In fact, when we go over and we take a look at the cube, the cube is also almost identical between the two versions. The investment went elsewhere. Good question. Any others? All right, let's take that one down. Now let's go and let's take a look at the cube itself. And to do that, I'm going to pop over to a different location. And sure enough, it's the wrong size. Just one second. Got to do this one more time. I probably have to come from. To give me options. Sorry about that. It always throws me when you plug in and the resolution changes. So in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to point a tool at the cube and rip it apart so we can understand what makes all of those reports possible. So the reports, the demos we're going to give, take a look at the overview. We've done that. What makes it possible? Where are the cube? How do we deal with it? What comes before the cube, the data warehouse, and the relational store that comes before that? So we'll talk about those three things. And we're going to do that through a visualization here. Then we'll go on to building reports using this information. So the core reporting infrastructure comes from all the data that's being tracked in a relational store. It's just a normal SQL server. It's got piled with all of your data, all your work item data, all your check-in data. It's all correlated. Every few minutes, that gets processed into a data warehouse. That data warehouse, about every hour, depends on your setting, gets processed into an OLAP queue. That processing then allows us to point reports against either the data warehouse or the cube, which means we have a lag in our data. The burndown I showed you at the very beginning on the web, there is no lag. That comes straight from the relational store. The rest of it has a lag, a 6-minute lag and about an hour long lag. So just so you know. So let's take this and let's point out to a cube. I'm going to create a new project. And you'll notice I'm not in Visual Studio 2012. In Visual Studio 2010, because that's what supports getting to SQL Server 2012. They lag one thing. I've heard news that they're going to catch up at some point. Yes. Sorry. I am on SQL 2012. You don't need to be. It doesn't really behave any different, except when we get to the last demos, where we're required to have it SQL Server 2012. So you can see right now, what I've done is I've pointed at the cube, and it's pulling it inside to show me all of the data in the cube. It's done, we can finish, and we can start to visualize this data. I'm going to open up the data source. This is what it's a big old mess, but this is what the data warehouse looks like. So you can see there's a lot of relationships. There's an awful lot of tables. They're both dimension tables and fact tables and virtual tables, vtables. And you'll see there's just a ton of these things in there. I'm not going to dive into each and every one of those, or even any of them. But you'll notice that all of the data is deeply correlated with other chunks of data. This becomes very, very important, and it's a differentiator between Visual Studio, Team Foundation Server, and all the competitors in the market that I'm aware of, is this deep integration from end to end. And we're going to see that a little bit later as well. Okay, so let's take a look at the cube itself. That's the data warehouse, and then this is the cube that's built from the data warehouse. Now, it looks somewhat similar if we look at the cube structure, but we can look at some of the dimension usage. And Thomas asked a question, how do I know what things relate to one another and how they relate in the cube? Because if you've done any work with a pivot table, you'll know that sometimes if you take two dimensions and slice by them, you get nonsense data, right? 300 lines of code change, 300 lines of code change, 300 lines of code change, total 300 lines of code. You know, that kind of data. That's if there isn't a relationship between the things you're mapping. So if you take a look at here, you can see where those relationships lie, the measure groups with the dimensions. And you can go in here and you can find all these things out. You can also link them. Like I could take and link, if I wanted, I could establish relationships between, if we do like a date, I can link the current work item to like the last update time, if I wanted to slice and dice by that. I don't recommend doing that at all. The cube is pretty finely tuned, and you can kind of mess it up. You won't break it. You can always change it back, but it's not something I generally recommend. You've got calculations, KPIs. If you do want to build KPIs, you can come in here and add your own key performance indicators. That's not a problem to add to the cube. There are actions, partitions, perspectives to slice and dice, etc. But that's our cube, and the main takeaway is the measure groups, the dimensions, so you can kind of just see that structure. Now, we're going to back away from this and actually start using it to build reports. So you had to kind of go through that to get a feel for the size of it and how it's all put together. Okay. First thing we're going to take a hold of is Excel. This is the canonical way to build reports. So I'm going to fire up Excel. And we're going to build an ad hoc report against the database. This is the simplest way to build reports currently. Who's built an Excel report? Quite a few. And it's because it's easy. You can hand off how to do this to a business analyst or to a project manager in about, I don't know, half an hour. And then they can go go crazy. There's a lot of dangerous data they can get there, like lines of code per developer per day. It's there. Just don't let them get it. So, from other sources, grab from analysis services. We're going to grab from the local server and the team system cube, and I'm going to pull it out. I'm going to give it a friendly name. The friendly name I'm going to give it is TFS OLAP report. You don't have to give it a friendly name. If you happen to give it a friendly name, that particular friendly name has some magic associated with it later on. So we'll come back and reinforce it when we get to uploading to SharePoint. But if it has the name TFS OLAP report exactly spelled like that, when it pulls up the report, it'll do some extra stuff for you automatically. We're going to plant a cube right here, and then we're going to jump into it. Now, I'm going to pull some data from test. So I can look here at test, and I want to grab some of the data around our testing. And we don't have much of that in our Scrum template, so I'm going to go down to test results, grab the outcome, drop it here. And for the data I want to grab the result count. I want to know how many results have been in there. And I've got a total of 192 results in this system. And then we're going to slice by, let's do a build configuration, a test configuration. So you can see what this kind of gives us. We're slicing and dicing our data on which tests are run by which configurations. Here's a magical piece of data. The unknown things. Those are all unit tests. So they're not associated with a Microsoft Test Manager, the MTM tests. So those I want to pull out of this, because I'm going to not look at our unit tests. So we can go over here to row labels, and we can get rid of the one row label that's defined, that is used by unit tests. Next thing I want to do in here to give us something interesting, let's go in here to insert a column chart. Maybe let's do kind of something 3D, like a little cylinder. And we can see what kind of data we have. Now we can see that we've tested against Windows 7 and IE8. We've got one failing, one passing. And the same against Windows Server 2008 and IE8. Not a lot of testing been done yet. But we also have these blocked items, four blocked tests against Windows Server 2008. We may need to find out more information about those. Because I kind of have explored this cube, I'll go look for the builds. Because I'm curious, if we took the build definition name and added that to the configuration, what would we see? We would see, I'll blow it up a little bit bigger, what we would see is that the tests that are blocked, they're blocked because we don't have a build to test them against. Okay, so they're tests that are forward-looking. Okay, does that make sense? So this is the kind of data that you get that we can slice and dice across the entire development lifecycle. Pull those pieces out. Okay. Once we've done that, I want to take a quick kind of a break and jump ahead for a moment. I'm going to prepare this item to go up on SharePoint. Because the next thing I'm going to show you is some of the SharePoint, the SharePoint dashboards and how we're going to extend those dashboards. So let's start with prepping this to go up on our own personal SharePoint dashboard. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to shrink it down a little bit. It's a little bit crazy big. Next thing I'm going to do, I'm going to go into the data, look at the properties, and here's where I want to refresh the data when opening the file. I'm kind of just getting used to every time someone opens this up, it's going to go back to the cube and pull new data. We want that to happen so that we can get up-to-date reports without people having to push refresh all the time. So we're going to refresh that data when opening the file. I'm also going to go here and I'm going to set our authentication settings to TFS. This is an SSID, a single sign-on ID that I've created in SharePoint. And I'm not going through that process on how to set that single sign-on, but it's simply a piece that will go and tell TFS that I have permission, here's my credentials, use this credential when you're requesting data. So I'm changing that to TFS. And last, I want that connection name to read TFS OLAP report. I can change it at any time. I can go up here and change it. At that point, we can click OK. And it tells me, see where this connection file is? It says, because you're pointing now to TFS as a single sign-on, we don't want to have that connection file. Can we get rid of it? And your answer to that is yes. And if we went back in, that line would be gone, which is a local file on my system. So it stripped that out. Next thing we need to do is we need to go down to Save and Send and get it prepared for SharePoint. And we do it right here. Drop over to Publish Options, and we say, what do we want to show up when we host this in SharePoint? And in our case, all we want is chart one. All we want is that graphic to show. You could show more. You could say, I also want to show the sheets. I want to show everything. There's no problem there, but I'm just going to show this one thing, chart one. And you can also specify some parameters. That allows people to change parameters right in SharePoint, and it makes the modifications for you. Once you've done that, we're going to save this thing, and I'm just going to drop it on my desktop, and we'll call it, what was it? That was the test outcome by configuration. We'll save it there. So I just want to have that in my back pocket for later. But that's the process you go to start getting things ready to host up on SharePoint. So it's a little bit of a pain. You can't just take anything and slap it up there. It does take a little bit of forethought. But that's all. And it's so rote that you just do the same things every single time. You could probably build a tool that did it for you if you had to do a lot of them. Meanwhile, I'm going to do one more thing. I am going to get rid of the build definition to keep it nice and tight and a kind of a more pretty one. And I'll save that. And we can close it. Here is this portal. And these portals, if I take a look deeply, we're going to switch now, context again. These are Excel spreadsheets, but I want to talk about how they're laid out right now. They've been dropped into this nice little folder called Excel Reports here. And we can see that they're just simply Excel reports that have some data associated with them. So we can see things like the remaining work report, these 7-day issue trends, user story progress. These are boring reports given what the data we have. We have some pretty lame data. But they're pulled, like if we wanted to see the bug progress report, we could, or the 7-day bug trend rate, we could click it, and that will open it up in SharePoint as a web page. We can then go in and open it inside of Excel. Inside of Excel, we can walk through and see exactly how it's configured. It's configured pretty much the same way. But do you see where it says team project hierarchy unknown up at the top? It doesn't know where it's coming from yet. I'm going to enable editing, enable the content, and because this particular data source that this one's based off is named TFS OLAP report, it automatically goes and finds the collection to associate it with this first time we open it. Okay. If we look here, we'll see the same sorts of things when we go to SharePoint. We can look, and it's going to publish chart one. This is pretty much the same thing. You can rename the charts, do anything you want along those lines. And if we drop down, we don't need to keep it anymore, or we can save it, either one. That's basically how those things work. They're stored in a folder called Excel Reports by default. And you don't have to store your stuff in Excel Reports. You can store it anywhere. It just has to be in some place that you've defined that has permission to access data sources. So I've granted permission to access data sources at the root of my entire site, so I can put them anywhere. But you can see there are several here. In fact, there are a lot. This is out of the Agile workbook. The problem is, let's swap back over. How many of you are on Scrum or do Scrum at work? If we go back to Scrum, that's our Fab Fiber portal, and we go to Excel reports, you got nothing. You got my little demo one that's built in there and a template for you to build off of later. That's it. So Scrum doesn't come with any of these nice reports. And I want to put those reports out on my front page. I want to have them here in my dashboard. In fact, I've just got this release dashboard. And frankly, the release dashboard doesn't look that interesting to me. It doesn't have enough data. Yes? So the question was, when I open up one of these reports, it shows it to me inside of SharePoint, and then I've got to open it in Excel to see it in the full size. And I can't make it bigger inside of SharePoint. Let me rephrase that, or re-emphasize. I can't make it bigger. I don't know how. Probably the two people that were presenting here before me could figure it out. I just have never made it bigger. I just open it up in Excel. You can, however, configure it to always immediately open in Excel. So you can do that. So it just opens immediately. So what I'd like to do is I want to extend my Scrum process. I want something new here. So we're going to grow this a little bit. So I've got my release burn down. This is my one dashboard. And I'm going to go over and I'm going to add another dashboard. And I'm going to do that by copying this one. You don't have to copy it, but it's pretty much a pretty easy way, and we'll call this test results, or let's call it quality. We'll call it our quality dashboard. And since it's quality, let's misspell it. Whoa, and let's not give it a title. Duh! Okay, so here we have it. It's simply copied it over, and we've got our release burn down. Nothing spectacular here. But what we want to do now is take that file that we've created, the SharePoint, or the Excel file, and we want to display it here on the screen. Fair enough? Is that valuable to folks? Do you use something like that? I see some head nodding. Here's the interesting thing. When I show how to do SSRS and when I show how to do the other reports, all of a sudden, Excel becomes a wonderful tool to use. The other ways of building reports are very complex, or can be complex. But Excel lets you just drag, drop with pivot tables. You can also throw Power Pivot on top of that and get an even more robust experience. And now, you can throw Pivot View on top of that, which will give you that same real easy experience, but yet, it's a way to report more easily, as long as you have someone who's built a data model underneath. Let's go in here and build this quality dashboard. First of all, I'm going to simply go in and edit the page. When we edit the page, we can add web parts, remove web parts, release burn down. Let's just delete that. We don't really want that web part. Instead, we're going to add an entirely different web part. And the web part we're going to add, if we drop to business data, is the Excel Web Access report. And let's add that to row one. And at this point, we need to start configuring that workbook. So now we're going to go through the process of making sure that we can display that chart in our web page. So to do so, we have to have access to that item, that report. So I probably should have done this earlier. I'm going to have to go over to Excel reports and upload it, add a document, test outcome by configuration. We're going to grab it and upload it into our Excel reports folder. back to the quality release, and back to where we were configuring this workbook. Very straightforward. All we do is we click the button to browse to the work, browse to the right location. Test outcome by configuration. And the named item is chart one. Now the nice thing is you have this little thing that you can click to explore, and all it does is give you a text box. So you may as well just test in there. Okay, let's go and do some of the changes. You can make any of these. These are just Chrome changes, what you want to see, what you don't want to see. I'm going to give it a new title. Rather than Excel Web Access, we'll do outcome by configuration. We can give it some size, fixed height. Let's go with, 400 is probably pretty good. And we'll adjust the width to fit the zone. We'll see if that works. And click OK. And what we get is that report now in our browser. Anyone notice a difference? It's not 3D anymore. So all the beautiful stuff you put together to make it 3D and all that just goes away. All you're left with is the simplest of the bar graphs. So just to let you know, you do lose some of that kind of functionality. So don't go crazy building really beautiful 3D things and getting it all right, because it will get flattened. This is where I see the biggest business benefit to reporting in companies, is right here. Reporting is hard, and most places don't use it effectively. They spend their time doing TFS at the micro level with the development team. What am I going to do tomorrow? What am I going to do today? What work items are assigned to me? What's our burn down? All these very small questions, which are very important questions. But until you step one level higher and start looking at what's happening across my teams, that's when you start to get some real good insight. And how people build that is right there. Unfortunately, it requires SharePoint Enterprise. So that's the drawback. However, if you have SharePoint Enterprise, it is the way to build these things. It's fast, it's easy, you can build multiple reports in a day rather than taking days to build a single report. Yes, I got to get your name, Vegan. Rob. Oh, okay. Good to see you too, Rob. So the statement is, it can be expensive, because if you buy the Enterprise Cal, it's not just for the team who's using SharePoint, I mean, who's using TFS. It may be the other people accessing it. In Jeff's talk, he has 40,000 people accessing this, but only 800 people providing data to it. So it's a bigger cost. You know, it's pretty much an Enterprise Cal across the company. So let me explain why I'm so passionate about this particular type of reporting. There was a company that we worked with, and we built a couple of these reports, and let me back up. They were a team who was consistently late at delivering software. And we helped them adopt Scrum. And as part of the Scrum adoption, we started putting all their metrics up in the visible place where anybody could find them. That was core to what we were doing, is transparency. Get our data up and out, show what we're doing. And three sprints in, they had not completed a single user story because they couldn't test it against a piece of equipment that they didn't own. They had to be able to test it against a piece of equipment. And so here, interestingly enough, the vice president of software development in Chicago calls these guys in Seattle and says, hey, I was looking at your site, and I noticed you haven't gotten anything to done. Why? They said, well, we have a machine on order, so we can start testing against it, but manufacturing ships it all to customers. They're a medical device manufacturer. They're a $1 million machine, right? So the priority is for the business to ship it to customers. The VP of software development got the next one shipped to that company so that they could start testing and deliver on time for once. They ended up delivering a month and a half early, winning huge kudos throughout the company. They've now spread that Scrum love throughout the organization there, and now the wider organization is asking those people to move and lead teams around the United States. So it was a dramatic success, but it came from transparency and saying, what am I doing? What about what I'm doing is important for me to show you? I'm going to go a little bit off the rails here for a moment, or a little bit up on a soapbox. IT and business, or dev and business, are often at loggerheads. And they'll come and say, when's it going to be done? Give me the date you're going to be done. You're always late. And it's always this fight with this estimation and all of these difficulties. Where I've seen dev teams and IT organizations be most successful is when they unilaterally disarm. They just get naked. Right? They're like, hey, this is our data. Come and look at it whenever you want, however you want to see it. You're completely transparent. We're not hiding anything. You know the day we're behind. You can tell. You can see it. And you can come and ask us for help. And all of a sudden, people are nervous because they think business is going to come in and take advantage of that data. They love it. And it starts to merge those teams. That's my one big recommendation, is get naked as a dev org. Right? Strip down. Here's my data, show it. But you've got to have a way to get that data out. And that's an awesome way to do it. Another great way is just provide everyone access to the cube. Let them slice it and dice it. Might be some security issues there. So, but, you know. All right. Yes, question. So the question is, this might be just the out-of-the-box SharePoint that TFS installs. What if I have an enterprise SharePoint, you know, for my company somewhere, my org? Can I do the same thing there? And the answer is yes. And in fact, this isn't the out-of-the-box one, because this is the enterprise version. I did take Brian Keller's demo VM that everyone here can download, but I uninstalled Foundation and reinstalled Enterprise, so that I could show this. If you have a SharePoint server, it is so easy to link those two together. If your farm admins are fine giving TFS service account farm admin permissions. Does that ever happen in large organizations? No. Then it's only slightly harder. It's whenever you have to create a new team project. You have to call up somebody with permission to build a new site. They build the site, and then you link it afterwards. So that's the only pain involved. It is so easy to connect those two. It flat out, it is one of the easiest things. And if you need these Excel reports, they can hit against any TFS cube. You don't have to have a relationship between the team projects, nothing. They can just easily go in there. Good question. Thank you very much. All right, any questions on that one? Now, we've built some of these reports. And let me drop, I'm in Tailspin Toys now. Let me drop back over to... go back to Fabricam Fiber for a moment. And building Excel reports is pretty easy, but you kind of have to know, and you kind of have to have spent some time slicing and dicing in that cube, kind of just playing in the cube, or looking at that kind of that graph I showed you, the dependency graph, where the things meet and how they meet. You kind of have to spend some time looking there. Another way is simply to use Visual Studio to do that for you. And many of you have probably seen this. Let me go into my work items. And I've got a query that I'll create. And I'm just going to grab my product backlog items. And I want to create the query with you. This is my all PBIs query. And the reason I want to create the query is because this query has column options. Now, if I run it, If I run it, you'll see here the results, and here it's assigned, state, done, work item type. I'm going to change and use some new column options here. So let me do that. Let me change this to PBI and add a couple things. I'm going to want the iteration path. I don't really care about the work item type because they're all going to be that one thing. And I don't know, that's probably good enough. We could do effort in there, description. Effort might be worth doing. So I have state, iteration path, effort assigned to, and title. Now let me click OK. There's my query. It's got more stuff in it now. Save it. And I'm going to right-click my query and create reports in Microsoft Excel. This is a way for you to automatically generate a bunch of reports and trending reports. You can pick out which ones you want. I'm just going to have it generate all of them. And it actually goes into the WICL and decides, WICL is work item query language. It's going to go into the work item query language definition here and figure out how to build all these reports for you. So you'll see we have a bunch of reports that are just out of the box. I mean, they're just built for us. So I can look at assigned to. Extraordinarily boring report. In this particular Scrum team, every PBI happens to be assigned to Brian Keller. Okay? So I might not want to do that one next time. Right? The idea here is you can spin these things up rapidly and then make the call as to what you want and don't want. The state. This is more interesting. This is effort by state. So notice what I've got here. Effort by state means how much time do I have in each of these states. Done, I've got 95 hours of done, 66 hours of new, and 18 hours of committed work. That's by effort. If I go over a little bit further, I can do the next report on state, and this is work item count by state. So it automatically figures out you might care a lot about how much effort is in your committed state, not just how many work items, because they could be bigger, they could be smaller. So that kind of thing just pops right out for you. We can go here to work item iteration hierarchy, and this looks absolutely boring. But that's because we haven't yet drilled into it. There's a little plus here. Let's drill into the iteration. Now we've drilled into release one. We can open it up again, and we see sprint one, sprint two, sprint three, and then things outside that sprint. If we expand this out, you'll see that you get the full thing here. So sprint one, sprint two, sprint three. How much stuff is in each of these sprints? So the idea here is you can just very rapidly get the stuff that you need. Questions? Yes. Oh, thank you so much. The question was, how did you create the tabs that it creates along the bottom? And I set myself up to answer that question and then totally forgot to. What those tabs are the columns that I selected for my work item query report. So I selected a set of columns that I wanted displayed. It looks at those columns, and every column becomes a one tab, basically, or two tabs, one for the current value, one for the trend, which we'll get to in a moment. Did that answer your question? So if you want more tabs across the bottom, you simply create more columns that you're slicing and dicing by. And they'll slice and dice by every column. as long as that column is in the cube. If it's not in the cube, it just says a warning and says, we're going to ignore this. Like if you put the description field. If I would have added the description field in there, it would have said, the description's not in the cube. We're not going to pay any attention to it. Okay, assigned to, again, boring. This is work item count, assigned to, work item state, work items in this hierarchy. Again, with this hierarchy, we can blow it out so we can see the iteration and now see the number of work items there. But maybe more important is the assigned to trend. Now, these trends show over time. What's it looked like over time that we've been doing this work? And it automatically drops that in for us. This is a big deal because the trending reports tend to be very valuable to people who are looking at what's going wrong with my team. A snapshot moment in time doesn't help nearly as much as are we adding too much work in process? Are we gaining too much stuff? What's happening? So you can see over time he's been assigned a lot more items. Now notice this state here. Right now he's been assigned a lot more, but the state includes closed. Well, that's bogus, right? So we just uncheck close. And guess what? None of them are closed. So he's still got all that work. But you can see how you can make those changes rapidly. Okay. State trend. You can see the state trending over time. This ends up being very easy to turn into a cumulative flow diagram. Here's the hierarchies. Once again, if you've got these, you can blow out the releases into sprints. So you can see how much work is in each sprint. And those should be relatively equal-leveled things over time. The assigned to trend, again, the same work item count. Okay, any questions about generating those? If I wanted to, I could save this file, upload it, and every one of these could just be on a portal. I mean, I could just put these on a portal like that, because it's now just Excel. This just ties straight into the Excel cube. Creating the reports is new in 2012. It is not. It's available in 2010 as well. It's available today for you if you don't have 2012. It's not quite as good. It's not as complex. It doesn't add as much supporting materials for you to change and modify. It kind of gives you the bare bones translation. But it's there and it's nice. It's already there. All right, we've created a dashboard, and now it's time to talk a little bit about a couple other things. Everything we've talked about today so far, up till now, has covered TFS 2010 and 2012, with the very exception of that beginning thing where we were saying, hey, look what we can do. We can walk through and reorder work items and stuff like that, when we showed the web page, the web portal. Everything else has been available in both. What I'm going to show you now is available only in only in SQL Server 2012. So it means you have to upgrade your backend in order to get that to happen. And it's using the tabular data model. Now, one of the nice things SQL has done is they've provided now a way that we can look at our data in a relational database, extract that into nice tables that we can relate, and then tie those to other data sources, completely different data sources than TFS. As long as I've got some kind of relationship between them, like customer ID, I can tie my bug database trivially to my Salesforce.com, that might not. Something that's local might be easier, but you could do it with Salesforce.com as well. To link those two together. So I could say, provide a graph, so when our help desk picks up the call from a customer, they can see the list of bugs that the customer might be calling about, all the open bugs that they've presented to us. A salesperson could use the same thing. Before they go on a sales call, they could find out, hey, you submitted 25 bugs to our application. Of those 25 bugs, I'm proud to say we fixed 13 of those things in the last 2 months. Just wanted to let you know before we talk about upping to the enterprise agreement or whatever. So you can tie those things together more easily. And you do that with this tabular data model. So let's take a look at what that tabular data model gives us. The tabular data model itself, you remember this? This is our cube structure. I'm going to close the cube structure. And I'm going to open a tabular data model. SQL Server 2012 is new. Microsoft has not yet built a tabular data model that you can just download and will sit on top of SQL Server 2012 with TFS and provide this data. This tabular data model, the design was by Jeff Levinson, who's up here. So huge thanks to Jeff for putting this together. What we have is a data model that is the start of mimicking what you can get out of the cube. Why this is important? The cube is fairly restrictive to get new data into. You have to build some pretty sophisticated ETL scripts, extract, transform, load stuff to get it in there, or you build some extensibility stuff that Microsoft has built for TFS that you can use, but it's non-trivial to get stuff into the cube, like your Salesforce data, into the cube. That would be difficult to do. The data model, like I mentioned, you just set it on top of it, and as long as you have a key, anything that can connect with another data source, bang, you drop in the other data source, and you're done. It's just that fast. And I can say, you know what? Show me bugs reported by geographic region, because I know who reported the bug. You know, I know that Company X reported the bug. I go over to Salesforce, and I know that they happen to be in this particular area of the country. Boom. I mean, I can start to find out data that can be really valuable and useful. But you need a data model. So this is the data model that sits on top of it. And afterwards, get a hold of Jeff and twist his arm to open source this. No? I don't know. To get there, we're going to go to a Power Pivot. This is a new feature. It sits in SharePoint. So if you have SQL Server 2012 installed somewhere, you can put Power Pivot into SharePoint and tie together the two. Right here, this is my site. I've got my Power Pivot gallery. It's very simple. I mean, the site's very simple. Let's drop into the gallery itself. And you can see we've got a couple things, test one, demo one. You can view them in all sorts of different ways. This is the gallery view. I kind of prefer the carousel view. You know, then you can kind of, you know, scroll between them if you like. But let's build a Power Pivot report from scratch. I've got the data layer. Somebody has provided me the data layer. You do have to have the data layer. Once the data layer is in, I'm going to start from absolutely nothing and build a report. So let's jump to the view of the library, and we're going to go to all documents. And here is the work item source. This is where I'm getting my data for all my work items. And one of the things here is create a PowerView report. And this PowerView report pops up right here. And I have data over here that's very similar to what you saw in Excel. Now, this is the data model. Let me open up, for instance, team project or person. Actually, let me just go all the way to work item. Let's grab assigned to. Click it, and notice assigned to appears over here. Let's stretch it out a little bit. And I've got Jeff, Martin Hinchelwood, Shad Tim, Stephen Borg dropped in here. Let's see what they're working on. I'm going to scroll down to work item measures, and let's see how much work they have to do. How much have they completed? Let's add completed work, and let's add remaining work. So you can see I've got completed and remaining. It's very small. I will be zooming in here in a bit. But I'm just going to convert it right now to a bar chart anyway. Let me drop it into a bar chart. And now you can see some of the data. Just one second. This is work by person and iteration. You'll see this in a moment. So you can see this is the remaining work. Jeff has a lot of remaining work. I can click on any one of these individuals and see the work that they have to do. Not overly exciting. You were able to get that with Excel pretty easily. But let's add some complexity to it. Let's go in and let's click off of this existing one and go back, and I want to add the story points and iteration path. And I want to turn this into a column report. Let's save it. And Report 1 sounds like an absolutely wonderful name for it. Let's dive into seeing what it looks like, and you'll see it a little bit better once we can go into full screen mode. So, can you read it? It's not trivial to read, but if you look down here, you've got Jeff, Martin, Shad, Steve, the work that's completed and remaining. Red is remaining. Down here is your story points by iteration path. Iteration 1, iteration 2, iteration 3, and a work item visualization iteration. In this view, what's down here is story points. What's up there is not related at all. I mean, there's nothing that's tying those two together other than they happen to be in the same data model. So let's see what happens when we come up and change something. Let's look at iteration 2. So I simply click on iteration 2, and did everyone just see that little animation happen? Now I'm looking at how much remaining work do we have in iteration 2. I can hold down the shift, the control key, and say, well, what about iterations 2 and 3? How much remaining work do we have there? Oh, what about, you know, release 1? Looks like that's where we did most of our completed work. Where is Shad doing his work? Oh, just iteration 1. How about Jeff? He must be gone during iteration 2. Do you see this very interesting behavior that can occur with this tabular data view, this model that they've dropped on top of it? What I did when I dropped on top of this to build it, I did not have to be an expert in any way, shape, or form. I could be just, I just happen to know what data I want to look at. As long as someone has given me that model, as long as someone has popped it on top of that, of SQL Server, I can point to this and do crazy stuff that blows away your stakeholders. When they see that, they go, wow. Let me go show one that Jeff's created. And let me pop back here. And just for giggles, let's look at it in a better view. Go back to our carousel view. And scroll over to find this one. This one's a little bit more sophisticated. Same type of data, but this time he's providing us with a little bit more stuff. We've got completed work, remaining work. We've got a couple different views of that. We have photos. He's just simply linked to an image URL, and it displays that automatically. And now we can go in and say, well, let's take a look at what's happening in this iteration. And those people just disappear. We're not working with them any longer. How about these two iterations? Do we add anybody? Yeah, Jeff, right? Because Jeff wasn't working in iteration 2. He's back on the team with iteration 3. So you can see very rapidly we could just click around, look at things in lots of different ways, add all those people back. Then we can go up here and say, what am I working on? You know, and look at things that way, etc. You guys... It's there in SharePoint already. Like, the question was, can I take this awesome thing and put it on the dashboard? And the answer is, yes, it's there in SharePoint already. It's just not an Excel SharePoint. It's a tabular data model that's a pivot view sitting on the tabular data model. But it's there in SharePoint, completely accessible anywhere. You can drop it in SharePoint. Yes, question.
Does it have to be the SharePoint Enterprise Edition?
Does it have to be the SharePoint Enterprise Edition? Yes, it does. So the answer for a lot of those is Enterprise Edition on a lot of these. And I know that can be an expensive purchase, but what Microsoft has done with a lot of these tools is just keep pushing more and more value into SharePoint Enterprise to make it worth the purchase. Questions on those? Yes, question. So the question was, right now, I've stressed that people need to have a data model, but that Jeff's the only one that knows how to build a data model for TFS. It's so new, I don't really have a good answer. I cannot imagine Microsoft not building one. They have this program where they take MVPs from around the world and they come work at Microsoft for a while, just short term. And they often get assigned like a 3-month project. And that would be the perfect 3-month project. And Jeff just said he is going to open source it. So
it'll take me about one more month to finish building, and then I'm going to be either putting it up on CodePlex as a project that you guys can all jump in and help with. But I will be doing this. Just make sure you know what you're doing before you show your boss a cool new shiny thing, because my boss just told me to go implement this.
Did everyone hear Jeff? Be careful what you show your boss, because you'll be asked to go implement it. That shows the power of this, doesn't it, though? Business people want data. They want to be able to see what's happening. I've talked about the absolute importance of being transparent. And that type of stuff helps them be transparent to their peers, but also helps them ensure that their teams are being transparent as well. Plus, it's totally cool to work on projects like this. Yes? If you use the data model, do you have to use the cube? No, you do not. In fact, the data model sits just fine right on top of the transactional store, or is that still a no-no? It sits on top of the warehouse. It's supposed to. If it sits on top of the question, what kind of delay on updating? If you sit it on the warehouse, it's about a 6-minute delay. So it's not too bad. You can always bump it down, you know, get a 1-minute delay or something. Yes, it's better than the cube. However, you can point it to the transactional data as well. But I am being recorded. You cannot point it to the relay transactional store. No, don't do that. If you have to, point to the transactional store. Sometimes there's more data in there that you need that you just can't get out of the warehouse. It's too much of a pain to get it there. But beware, there's a lot of stuff going on in the transactional store. And if you start slamming a lot of transforms being pulled out of it, you might slow down your production TFS instance. So that's why Microsoft says don't do it, ever. More questions on that? Excellent. Yes? That is a fantastic question. The question was, can this source data from things other than SQL Server 2012? Jeff?
Yeah, so the great thing about Power... So
very loud.
Yeah, okay, very loud, since I'm not mic'd. So the great thing about the tabular model is this is the same
technology that Microsoft used on Power Pivot stored in SQL Server. So it becomes a scalable model, which means you can pull data from any source that you can grab data from. So if you want to grab it from SQL 2010, great. If you want to grab it from a SharePoint site or whatever example you were using, Salesforce, you can grab it and pull it all together. So one reason for doing this model that I was interested in when I started this project is there's no time in the warehouse in TFS. There's no time. It cuts off. It's days only. Except I want to count duration. I can't count duration in days. I need to count duration in hours. Now I can do it because I can pull data. I'm not being recorded. I can pull data out of the relational model.
So I'm going to just quick summarize in case people couldn't hear. The answer is yes, absolutely, and a fantastic question. From SQL Server 2012, you can pull data from 2010, from a lot of places, basically wherever you could pull Power Pivot data from, which was web services, which was all just a massive number of different things. So yes, wonderful. Reporting isn't just being able to build these kind of static reports. Reporting is also being able to very rapidly ask questions. What can I do? What do I need to know about this bug? What do I need to know about this bug fix? What do I need to know about my user stories? How am I doing? How's my progress? You've seen a lot of the reports. But those reports and the queries that you do in TFS tend to be very, very restrictive. You have to kind of define a two-dimensional model to look at it. So the tool I'm going to show you now is, I think, just a fabulous tool for answering some questions that you just are not able to answer without it. So I have a question that I'm going to pose. Here's my question. I just fixed a bug. I got in, sat down, coded up a bug fix, submitted it. A tester walks in and says, great, that bug was associated with this requirement. I'm probably going to need to run some of my tests that run against that requirement. The problem is, the code that was fixed may have been used by other requirements as well. Right? That code, that data access layer code, whatever it was, when you fixed it, it could have impacted more than one requirement. How do you know that where that impact lies? How do you do that today? How do you guys do it? Or your teams do it? Ah, yes. I love that answer. You give it to your customers, and they'll tell you. I love that. That's a good answer. You look at your change sets. What do you do with your change sets?
Not as much.
Okay, so you find the change set that you associated with the bug fix. You look at the files associated with it. And then what? Compare it against all the other change sets in your TFS server. Yes, that's exactly right. Annotate. Oh, brilliant. Greg, was that you? What's your name? You just got to get cred for that, Jason, so you got to have your name out there. Annotate. That's brilliant. You look at the file, you annotate it, it'll tell you all the changes. You can find all the other change sets associated with it. I'm going to show you another possible solution. I'm going to go into this team project, drop into something called servers. I've got two types of servers. I have two collections here, Fabricam Fiber and Tailspin Toys. Let me jump into Tailspin Toys collection. It's got a team project, Tailspin Toys. I want to look at all of its bugs. This is a really simple example. It's got one bug. Yay! So I'm going to look at that bug. That bug contains change set 66. That change set contains a change to one single file, cartcontroller.cs. And then what I do is I say, show me all of the other change sets which are impacted by this. I can highlight these. And then I can say, show me all of the other work items associated with that. So I can now start walking up the chain. I'm going to stop right here for a moment at just the change sets. And I'm going to click this little button here, which is going to give me a nice little view . Check that out. Of all my bugs, I've got one here where I've entered a negative number for quantity caused the item to disappear from the cart, whatever. Change set 66 was the thing that fixed it. But I've got a whole bunch of other change sets associated with that. Right? So in other words, just to make sure I'm being very clear, change set 66 was the only change set that fixed that bug. That change set did only one file. That one file, however, was touched by other change sets. It was touched by change set 44, 56, 63, and 73. So I may have to now go and look at fixing, you know, at where these are. So what I want to do is I want to take these change sets and then roll them up to what bugs they were in response to or what tasks, and then roll that up to what features or what PBIs or user stories. Okay? So that's where you can do this. Interestingly enough, with this data, let me color this a little bit. I'm going to make sure that the bugs, we want to make sure that they've got some kind of color here. Like that. Did I just push cancel? And there's another nice little thing here, which I can run an analyzer, an unreferenced nodes analyzer. That simply goes through and says, hey, who doesn't have a parent? And now I know I'm hosed. Because I have four check-ins that nobody associated with the work item, so I have no clue. I got nothing. I got to go open them up and say, well, they were part of the cart controller, so, Now I can go talk to who changed those check-ins, who put those change sets into the system without giving me any traceability. Do you see how that can start to provide some really deep insight? I love Jeff. Jeff points it against his production application, and it ends up showing this massive amount of bugs and user stories and test cases and which test cases are passing, which are failing. And you can do some really interesting things. Like I can group things. So I can add these groups. This thing is into one separate group. This particular bug fix, I've pulled to the side and chunked it out. You can wrap things up in other things. Show me all of the bugs and wrap them up in their own little bug fix place. This tool is just released on CodePlex this morning. So you can go out and, not CodePlex, sorry, Code Visual Studio Gallery this morning. Email me or check my blog. I will have that blog post up before the day is over, pointing to where you can download this. This is another Jeff Levinson creation. So another huge kudos to Jeff. The Architecture Explorer Work Item Extension. Now the bad news is it requires Visual Studio Ultimate to run, because it runs in the Architectural Explorer. Or that's the good news, I guess, depending on what side of Microsoft you're sitting on. Okay, let me jump back. I have just a couple minutes that I will back to wrap up. What did you think about the Work Item Visualizer? Is that just not sweetness? It's just an amazing thing. That's not working. There we go. So demo. What data should you gather? Metrics can be bad. TFS, one of the biggest resistances we see to TFS in organizations is that they're gathering so much data and people are scared. Watch out for your metrics and what you choose to display. Your metrics should be comparable, simple, actionable, and honest. I talk about this more tomorrow morning at 8:30, where we talk about what metrics should you be looking at and should you be gathering. And then I talk about one metric, which I believe is the metric to rule them all. I never thought I would ever say that. I always thought that metrics, it's just always contextual. But I have one metric that I honestly believe at this moment in time is an extraordinarily powerful one to drive process improvement. And we'll talk about that. But we'll talk about that tomorrow at 8:30. Make sure that your reports communicate something. Don't just do a report for report's sake. That's a waste of time. And worse, managers manage what they can measure. And if they can't measure it, they manage what they can measure. Boy, that came out all confusingly. But managers often manage what they can measure. So don't give them a measurement from something that's not an effective measure, right? Because they'll look at it and go, oh, yes, lines of code. Awesome. Speak the language. If you're targeting your CIO, do not talk about, you know, unit test passes and number of mocks per lines of code, etc. This is, again, from the talk tomorrow morning. Keep it focused. Keep it simple. Keep it visual. Visual is the key. Keep it real. Don't visualize misleading metrics, and keep it moving. If your graph is not changing 1 to 2 times a day, that report will not be looked at every day. So it's a critical thing. This is also from the Kanban talk. If you're interested in Kanban, I'm giving a talk on Kanban tomorrow afternoon. Your immediate to-do, run the work remaining report. Absolutely. That report is just an awesome report. Any final questions? Metro style Win 8 dashboard for managers. That is the, I forgot to delete the little thing off it. That is the web front end. It's all Metro. It's got kind of the layout. You can add your own pivots and those sorts of things right there. Your own views. It's very extensible. But there might be something more in the future. I just don't have an insight into that. Other resources, of course, and more track resources. Complete your evaluations. Please do your evaluations. It's one of those things that it's good to do. You can scan this tag. Okay. And PowerPoint guidelines for those of you who want to know how to build PowerPoint slides for Tech Ed. Thank you very, very much for your time. And if you have questions, come on.